Okay, so now we have Dave Rupert from Texas A&M Kingville.
Thanks very much. So I'm going to be talking about nutrient cycles and how I, in a way that I've developed that I think works very elegantly to teach them.
Recording, okay.
All right, I'm
record
back.
For all humanity will be.
All right. So if you Google image nitrogen cycle, this is just a smattering of what you come up with. We've probably all done that. And it's dizzying thinking, which one would I use? Which one is best? And it's funny, if you look in textbooks, when they do the nitrogen cycle, or the carbon cycle, the sulfur cycle, all the figures are different, even in the same textbook. There's no one unified way to do these things, right, that's out there. So students could be forgiven for being absolutely intimidated by learning nutrient cycles because every single cycling diagram is totally different, which is to say it's arbitrary. Each one has been drawn arbitrarily by whoever the artist was or whoever the teacher was. And so what's the unifying concept about these things? They all look different. Which one is best? And many of them are terribly complicated. So here's the nutrient cycle that a professor or the teacher, whoever they are, borrowed from Brady and Weil. And I think you've all seen, Brady and Weil is the best soil book out there. It's fabulous. This is a great diagram. It's especially great if you already understand the nitrogen cycle, right? Then it's fabulous. It's fabulous. But look what this teacher did. They punted. They put a little black square up there that said very complex as nitrogen occurs in solid, liquids, and gases. And, it's just complex. You know, here's the figure, right? We'll move on. So I suggest that in fact there are a few very fundamental underlying mechanisms that govern all redox-related nutrient cycles, and they can be utilized to come up with a single framework to do any of them. All right? So the first two are the big ones. There are state changes that are due to oxidation reduction reactions and due to pH. All right? Now, once you understand that, then that means that what's going to result is that sometimes species will be lost from the soil, either due to leaching or volatilization. I don't even need to say this because you know it. And of course, there can be retention, either because we've precipitated something or we've created an ion that can be held within the exchange capacity. All right? Amen. So what we're going to so the framework that I'm going to provide you with today is looking at that very first bullet point, really. The state changes that are due to oxidation reduction. So we're going to start with a blank page, and let's do the carbon cycle first. All right, we'll do the nitrogen cycle after this. So of course, this part is arbitrary. What are the species that you're going to be teaching, right? Well, here's the ones that I do. All right, we got CO2, we got carbonate, we got limestone, we've got glucose, we've got organic carbon. All right. And we've got methane. Okay, sorry about that. All right. Now, we're going to be looking at the state changes that are due to redox reactions. So what that means that we're going to have to take into account is figure out what's the carbon oxidation state in these species. All right. So this is a great thing for the students. The students hate chemistry. They're afraid. And this forces them to deal with it. And so we've got our oxidation states, right? There's our oxidation states. And now the tricky thing about organic carbon is that it could be anything. That's the glorious thing about carbon, right? Right. But the organic carbon is going to be somewhere between -3 and +3 for the oxidation state on that carbon atom, all right? And then we just figure out fairly easily what's the state of matter. You know, if it's charged, it's going to be aqueous. If it's not charged, it's either going to be a gas or a solid depending on how heavy it is, all right? So then we've got that. Okay? And now what we do is we create axes where we, on the y-axis, we have the state of matter, and on the x-axis, we're going to have the oxidation state of the species. So here's state of matter, gaseous, aqueous, or solid. Here's the oxidation state that's on the x-axis, and I always put the highest possible oxidation state to the right, the least possible oxidation step to the left. All right? And then what we do is simply put these species where they belong in the diagram. So we can do that. So here's CO2, carbonate, limestone, glucose, we'll just treat as it's being aqueous. Organic carbon gets a bubble because, of course, it could be aqueous or solid. It could be oxidation state can be anywhere between -3 and +3. And then we put methane up there. All right? Now, of course, we're doing this for carbon, but you could do this for nitrogen. You could do it for sulfur. You could do it for iron, for manganese, for plutonium. Okay? And then we just fill in the blanks, right, with the different processes that we highlight based on the species that we've chosen. So, of course, here's photosynthesis. And photosynthesis is dashed. It's different than the other processes we're going to see, and we'll talk about that in a second. So we've got photosynthesis, respiration. We've got carbonation, right, some kind of volatilization or vaporization, right? We've got precipitation of limestone, and then we've got dissolution, okay? Then we've got methanogenesis a couple different ways. Oops, where did methanogenesis go? All right. Then we've got just the oxidation of methane, too, okay? And, of course, respiration that we've got with glucose stands in for any type of respiration that occurred with any type of organic carbon. All right. So very good. There's our carbon cycle, okay, according to state of matter on the y-axis and oxidation state of the species on the x. Okay, so let's notice something. We've got oxidation number on the x, we've got state of matter on the y, all right, and we've got the least oxidation number on the left, greatest on the right, gaseous, aqueous, and solid. And there's certain things that are always going to be true or mostly going to be true when we do this, okay? For example, in aerated environments, we're going to have oxidation, right? We all know that. In anaerobic environments, we're going to have a reduction, okay? We are going to have losses either through leaching or volatilization. We will have retention either because we've precipitated something or we've got ion exchange that's doing it, okay? And interestingly, this is often but not exclusively true, that when we move up in this diagram, it's because conditions have become more acid. You know, think of the limestone to carbon dioxide, right, that we saw on the carbon diagram. But the same thing happens with places for nitrogen. Same thing happens with things for sulfur, all right? And then if we go down, then we're increasing in alkalinity, all right? So there are certain things part of this is students remembering this too, okay? But it's worth it because if they know how to build these diagrams and they've got this, then they can do any redox cycle, all right? And another thing that's helpful too is to have a Lancet catena with a water table aerated above and unaerated below, all right? So and then we can retain things either through precipitation or cation exchange. We lose things through leaching or we lose them through volatilization. All right? So this is the other thing that they've got to remember, too. But it's worth it because it's going to work for all of these things. So what are the advantages of this? Well, we have a unified framework to teaching cycling of any redox-sensitive element. Teaching cycling is therefore easier. It's less arbitrary, right? There's a system to this. Students memorize important species. They memorize transformations and can calculate oxidation states versus memorizing arbitrary figures and hoping that something sinks in by just memorizing these arbitrary figures. The structure of the diagrams indicates where in the landscape processes occur, all right? There's a predictable framework which helps students interpret arbitrary cycling diagrams once they decide to look at them again. There's an overall understanding of redox-sensitive elements is improved, and it's also a nice way to prepare students to interpret mineral stability diagrams if you're then going to do that. Which you might want to do if you're going to do the iron cycle, for example, and you're going to what are the conditions that decide whether you're going to have ferry hydride or goethite or something like that. So, what about nitrogen? All right. So here are the nitrogen species I use. Okay. Here are the oxidation states on the nitrogen atoms for these. All right? Of course, states of matter, that's easy. If it's charged, it's going to be aqueous, you know. And so how about this? Why don't you guys, if you've got a blank sheet of paper, draw an y-axis, draw an x-axis, okay? You're going to have a gaseous, aqueous, and solid on the y. You're going to have the lowest oxidation number on the left side of the x-axis. You're going to have the highest oxidation state on the right side of that x-axis. And now you populate those things where they go. So let's do it together. All right. So here's our axes. State of matter. Got that. Oxidation state. Got that. Now let's put these species in. So nitrate, of course, is aqueous and highest oxidation number. Nitrite. Nitrogen gas. Ammonia gas. Ammonium. Then we have organic nitrogen, you know, CrH2. Very good. And then you can make then knowing the transformations that we have, right? We've got ammonification, we've got nitrification, we've got the uptake of ammonium and nitrate, we've got denitrification, nitrogen fixation, and then the vaporization of ammonium and or the condensation of it, you know, for lack of better terms. And now notice here, if it's an oxidizing reaction, it points to the right. If it's a reducing reaction, it points to the left, right? Sometimes that's going to occur in the landscape as a whole, like denitrification. Sometimes it's going to occur within a rhizobium, right, with nitrogen fixation. But the bottom line is it's got to be an anaerobic environment, okay? So, done. You know, can you do sulfur, all right? Now, I have not tested this yet. Well, I like it, so I teach it, but I haven't tested it formally against, you know, just the arbitrary diagrams and the way it's usually done. I've almost forgotten how it's usually done because I like this so much. But I would love to work with you to test this at a bunch of institutions so we can have a nice paper about it. Okay? I'm a lowly assistant professor, so please don't scoop me. All right? You know, I'd like to get a publication out of it and all that stuff. But that's me, and I would love to work with you. Thanks a lot.
That moment for question two.
So just combining your presentation and yours, I think it'd be really great to have students work this up, but then skip and pull in one extra ingredient, right? Is it whipped cream? Is it nitro beer? You know, something like that, and position that. Hey, here's my special edition of nitro.
To make it a little bit more down to earth.
Bring it home.
And then there's the offshoot of the chemistry that goes into making that product too. I mean, there's like, you can take it the other direction so they can explore why that one's got that in it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, so I'm a physicist. Uh-huh. And
I am too. I have got my master's degree in physics.
Cool. I was just wondering if you could think of a way to extend this framework to water and energy cycling, because that's what I'm teaching. So I was curious if you thought about it, or if you think it's essentially possible. Because in a way, we're all teaching cycles. You know?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I have thought about it a little bit. I'm coming up dry with what those previous thoughts were. You know, this diagram is really predicated on that state of matter,
yeah,
right, and the oxidation number. But you can have state of matter based on kind of the inherent energy that you've got in vapor versus, you know, ice or something like that. So that could still be the That, yeah, so that could still be, but then what you've got is you've really just got a phase diagram almost. So what this does is it interfaces well with those phase diagrams, I think. So I would love to think about it more. I think that'd be great. Let's work together.
Thank you so much.